Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing.
Today, our guest is none other than Sam Eaton. Sam is a global business coach for the HR profession with over 25 years of experience in building successful HR consultancies internationally.
Her passion stems from decades of industry experience. Through her mistakes and successes, she helps other business owners achieve their goals.
Beyond coaching and courses, Sam has launched a successful podcast, written a book, and become a keynote speaker. As a go-to in the industry, Sam has the experience and resources to help you grow your HR consultancy.
Welcome to the podcast, Sam.
Wow, what an intro. Is that me? Thank you so much, ladies. It's really great to be here.
That is you. All right, so let's dive right in. Sam, how did you end up doing this? Your company is called Mindability, and I know you work with HR consultants or aspiring HR consultants all over, I assume, the world at this point, most of it anyway. How did you get here? How did you start doing this?
Great question. I have been building businesses for over 25 years, maybe slightly more. And in that time, I came across HR consultancies. What really, really kind of piqued my interest at the beginning was the value that HR consultants and HR in general was adding to organizations, but also how poorly served the selling side, the commercial side of it was. And when I first joined an organization, I had lots of CHROs who wouldn't buy from me because I was too commercial. So I had to do the opposite of most people. I had to learn the world of HR and really become the BFF for the CHROs to sell, to learn their world, to collaborate with them and build a business. Fast forward to 2020 and the pandemic and my dream of launching Mindability business number 5, I brought that forward from 2025 to 2020. And I really felt that if then wasn't the time, that the world didn't need a business coach who had built by then multiple consultancies that I didn't know when was. I had a feeling that the world of work was going to change. And I also still to this day, and even more so, fundamentally believe that without great people like you, how on earth is the world of work going to change? So that's how we started. And our whole mission is to really amplify the voices of consultants to help them build a successful business on their terms.
I find everything you just said, Sam, fascinating, because I've been a CHRO and I've been the person receiving all of the sales emails. And I'm going to be honest, I just deleted most of them because they I was overwhelmed by emails and BDRs coming and trying to sell me something. But now on the other side of it, it's so interesting, but I will tell anyone who listens, I don't want to sell to HR. HR is terrible to sell to. So can you tell us a little bit about what you've learned about how HR moves from the person who, like me, hated receiving the sales calls, hated receiving the sales emails, and transitioning to, well, if that's not what worked for me, what will work in my practice?
Kim, thank you for asking that question. Great question. And here's the thing. During that process, I guess my question to you is, who would get through? And it's a rhetorical question, because when I talk to my clients, but I would like to hear your opinion as well, is those who built the trust with them, those who weren't, to your point, weren't the business development people who came in being super salesy and went straight to advocacy. This is your problem and this is how I can fix it. Well, firstly, you don't know me, Kim, my problem. You don't know who I've spoken to or the real challenges I'm facing. So how about giving me the good grace to get to know me and understand that? So with that in mind, I always say to consultants I'm working with, put yourself back on the other side of the fence again. Most people have been there in a short time previously. who, not what got through, who got through and why, and how do you replicate that? And I guess, Kim, I'm curious what some people would obviously have got through. Who got through for you?
So for me, it was always about something that was very relevant to what I was doing at that very hot moment. It was also somebody who took the time to research who I was, what we were doing as an organization, and actually spoke to me in language that made sense. So a lot of BDRs don't take that time. A lot of people who are selling don't really, it's very generic. But the other thing I would say, Sam, is something I've learned, and I'd love your perspective on it, is I sell by creating debt. So I give things away all day long, and that's my sales process. I connect people to each other, and that's my sales process, which is something I've always done throughout my entire career, but I've never actually commercialized it. And now it's a real commodity for me that I have a network. Tell us a little bit about, both of those things. So first of all, reaching out to people and doing the research and being thoughtful, but also the idea about building debt and helping to use those resources to help others. And if in your experience, that is effective for others as well.
Firstly, I absolutely love what you just said, Kim. The world is so full, particularly now, of people who want to make that fast buck. I can make you £11 billion by tomorrow morning and get you to be a size four. Well, great, but have you seen this? Come on now. The real art is in just being human, which is exactly what you just talked about. And being able to demonstrate that you've got that expertise. So actually, how I describe what you call as a debt is putting a pebble in someone's shoe. Let me help you. Let me demonstrate how I can help you. And I heard it from someone else, by the way. It's not my phrase. But let me see how I can help you. And I visualize often all the people around the world who are going around with a sand pebble in their shoe. Knowing that it came from me, from my team, from my company, and in time, that goodwill will create that goodwill back. So I love that analogy, but I describe it slightly differently. And I also think it's really important on so many levels, as I said, demonstrating you know what you're talking about, demonstrating actually that you care, because that fast buck mentality is very unattractive, and sadly, something that is very prevalent these days in terms of buy my service now, you must buy it now. If you don't, this will happen. Well, guess what? The sun will still rise tomorrow, and I'm going to do it my way. So jog on,
I love that. That's very inspiring. Because it's just a very really power visual. And I realize you're not taking credit for it, but I do love it. All right. So you help consultants build their business. I feel like during COVID, like to frame the time period that you started this business in, I feel like every HR person who possibly could went into consulting. The market just became incredibly saturated overnight with consultants. I really feel that. And hey, no judgment because Kim and I were part of that. Part of that same time period. So no judgment in any way. But what when they come into this and you start working with them, what are some of the mind shifts that they need to undergo to become successful? Because one thing I have learned, particularly from trying to find help in my business, other consultants I can work with, is that corporate HR and consulting is very different. And it does not matter how many corporate years of experience you have. You don't necessarily get consulting. Now, Kim and I both have consulting in our backgrounds from before. And I think that that probably, helps us a lot. But many people who went into consulting during that time period didn't. And so what are some of the mind shifts and kind of mistakes that you see them making that sort of inhibits their success?
And Jennifer, just to add to that, it's not only, I think, the consulting piece, but it's about building. People coming from very large organizations
Yeah.
where they were surrounded by teams of 200 people and, very specialized teams building different parts of the process. Going into consulting, you're doing it all from soup to nuts. So, Sam, what are you, absolutely, I love Jennifer's questions. Like, what are you seeing and how do you help people with that?
Yeah, another great question. First and foremost, Jennifer, you know it because you're successful. You've done the hard graft. The first thing is stop being an employee. You know, someone sends an email and you're going to answer straight away. Someone sends a WhatsApp, you're going to just stop. You are selling your services, your expertise. You are providing real value to an organization who, guess what, wants you there. They are paying you to be there rather than what you previously were, which was paid for an organization to be in a room where they didn't want you.
Yeah.
So, right.
Solid.
Straight between the eyes, that one. But how often have you heard that?
Can you say that again, Sam? I love that.
Yeah, it's you are now being paid to be in a room where people want you. As previously, you were paid by an organization to be in a room where people didn't want you there.
We feel so seen right now. This has never happened. This is the most fun episode already, and we're only 5 minutes in. This is like therapy for consultants. I can see why you're so successful, Sam.
Feeling better about my whole life
Right, you now are working with organizations who want you there. So rather than think, oh, I don't want to bother them, I don't want to hassle them, you don't have to. Ask them, yeah, were there any questions I wasn't able to address for you? Let's talk about how I can best support you. Did I miss anything? So when rather than give, you know, a proposal, how about giving them a recommendation and talking them through it? Because you've got this wealth of experience from corporate that you're bringing to a small organization. And by the way, get rid of the corporate jargon because no one gets it, right? And really find out where you can add the best value. And don't necessarily take the symptoms that are being described to you as the root cause of the challenges. Really get curious about asking those questions. And here's the thing. So many consultants, when they first start working with us, say, oh, well, I'm all new to this. You're not. Most people have had anywhere between 10, 25, even 35 years of corporate experience. You are way more advanced and ahead of anyone else. You're just using a different vehicle, which just happens to be your own business. So, guess what? You're still an employee of your own company, but you're just choosing who you want to work with. So, that employee mindset shift is really important. The second part is that curiosity. The third part is how you label yourself. So many people, when they start working with me, say, hey, we're an HR consultant. You're not. You're a business owner whose area of expertise happens to be HR.
Yeah, I think I mean the business acumen piece of just keeping the business going has to be a whole other part of it that some people I'm assuming struggle with.
Going from, you know, somebody who comes into a company and adds value, but having a history where you were in a room and maybe nobody really understood your value. I think one of the greatest challenges for HR people in particular is how do I price myself? What is that value? How do you support folks going out on their own where they've sat at that table and, you know, kind of their hair was on fire telling people they needed them there and they were never felt like they were needed, that now they have value and now they have to assign a price tag to it. How do you do that?
Do you know what? That is the $11 billion, not even the $1 million question. And the reason why I say that is, first and foremost, there's no right or wrong. However, there's a gray, which is undervaluing yourself. Jennifer will know I talk about selling value where you can. So there's certain areas where you can go through that process of, okay, so for example, this piece of work might take me 8 hours, but I want you to then think about what about your thinking time? So, Kim and Jennifer, if you were working on a project together, have you included your collaboration, your internal time on that project? What about how you communicate with that client? And take yourself back to a time in corporate where you've dealt with this specific situation and it went wrong. What was that kind of time like? If you're selling a value piece and you're selling a fixed cost, those are the kind of questions we ask to really work together to help you come up with a profitable fixed cost and a price that will work for you, that'll work for your client. And that helps you replace and exceed your corporate income. Jennifer and I have had many conversations on this. There are, of course, things where you cannot sell a fixed cost, grievances, certain employee relations issues where, the ones that we're all told this is a scenario, but actually there's a massive closet over there with quite a few skeletons that would have been really helpful if they were told to us at the early stages, right? So those kind of scenarios is really hard to put a fixed cost on. So in terms of the hourly rate, if you think, just for example, you should be selling at 125, would, and that's where you think you should, and I don't like the word should, now think about what you'd like to be selling at. And actually, now give yourself a little stretch, go somewhere in the middle of that and try that for size. The reason why I say that, again, it goes back to being the person in the room where no one wants you to be. That will lead you to initially underselling yourselves. And please don't beat yourself up on that one, because this is also a new habit and a new skill you're creating. And that's not to be underestimated.
I think it takes so much time to get used to that. Now, as you know, Sam, well, I am a partially reformed hourly biller. I come from such a strong billable hours background, starting my career in law firms and staying there for a decade. The whole value-based pricing concept, it's just like, I don't know, it's just so foreign to a lot of people, and you just kind of actually have to get used to it. You don't just, I found, tell, like, comment if you found with others something different, but it's like you got to just do it, and then suddenly you're like, I don't understand why I had such a problem with this before. Like, why? But you just kind of have to get used to it. It's almost like a habit. It's very ingrained, almost like you were raised on it. And Kim, I think you would come from primarily a billable hours background too, or you did, they probably do quite a lot of project cost, but it's crazy to me sometimes the issues that I got so stuck on at the beginning that I now find so common sense. And I'm like, why was I stuck on this? Like, I used to think I couldn't delegate anything. They only want me to do it. I talk to them. They know me. If they find out I let someone else edit this policy manual, I will be a liar. Weird. Like, now I think that's absurd,
Well, the
but
other
that's how
thing
I
is,
felt.
Jennifer, what I also learned is not, there are clients that are not the right clients for us as well. And so I had one experience where I told the client what my pricing would be for a 1 hour workshop, for example, and their eyes fell out of their head. They're like, "That's what you earn an hour?" I'm like, "Dude, I'm not standing in a factory. It takes me 30 hours of research, preparation, putting together the slides, the multimedia view of this. So when I stand in front of you for that 1 hour, no, that's not my hourly rate. It's the value of what this workshop brings to you. And you're recording it. You have it forever." So, in that situation, I realized very quickly that client was not going to be the right client because they didn't see. They didn't understand what it takes to stand in front of a group of 50 people for an hour. And that's okay. I mean, do you find that as well, Sam, that there are some clients that you're just going to have to walk away from?
Completely. For the very reason you've just explained, this is, here's what it's going to cost for me to deliver this 1 hour piece. And the complete lack of understanding of, to your point, the days, the hours, the cost to putting that together in the first place. So it comes across as slick. So the outcomes are impactful and powerful for the people in the room to be able to embrace and answer some of the most difficult questions whilst you're there. And people will leave that room. Multiple people will leave that room at the end of the 60 minutes or 90 minutes, whatever it is, with a real impactful takeaway and something that they can implement in their business straight away. And I often say to my clients, if a prospect or a potential client, same thing, just said differently, doesn't understand that, then absolutely walk away. Why waste your breath?
But can you give us some tips on maybe how to help articulate it better so that we can help them to understand it? And understanding that sometimes it's just not going to be a good match. But what can consultants do better in helping their clients or potential clients to understand that longer term value?
The one thing that I would say is take them on that build with you. Yes, we can absolutely do this. What it will take for us to do is we will perhaps interview two or three members of your leadership and maybe ELT as well, line managers, maybe the 90, whatever that process is to get the diagnosis piece and diagnose that correctly, explain that to them. Then explain that we will then go on to build and tailor what we already have so it's right for you. We'd like to then just check in with you beforehand and talk about these are the outcomes. Is there anything you need us to tweak? Then the delivery of any materials or anything afterwards. So by taking them and explaining all of that, by the time you're sharing the investment, which is obviously the cost of it, we're very careful with our terminology as well. It's an investment. At that point, if the client doesn't appreciate that, it's one thing to say, actually, we haven't got this in our budget, it's X. That's a separate conversation. But if there's still a lack of comprehension as to what goes in it before the day of the delivery, then I question if they're the right client in the first place. Particularly if you're getting that buy-in and you're asking the questions along the way to make sure that they've understood and you've got the right approach and you're addressing the right challenges.
I also think another great qualifier for a good client is someone who can appreciate the fact that we're a third-party consultant. We may be fractional, we're somewhat integrated, but we feel a lot more freedom to tell you the truth. So HR employees will lie to their CEO so that they will continue to sign their paycheck. Consultants have a little bit more agency to be able to tell you what you really need to know, even if it's a difficult message to deliver. Granted, not all clients appreciate it and they want you to lie to them, which is, I wouldn't work with somebody like that as a consultant because it seriously detracts from my value. So let's talk a little bit about what you think the main advantages are, the one I listed, I think, being one of them, of working with a consultant versus, having this tendency, kind of like our billable hours tendency, to just feel like they must always be an employee and somehow that's going to be more effective. Because I think that's a really common myth. They'd rather have someone internal. And I actually think external can be more valuable in the sense that they have the freedom to give you the real goods, let's say.
I fundamentally believe that the external consultancy workforce now is way more powerful than the in-house. I have huge respect for the work that the in-houses are doing, so I'm not saying that they aren't valuable. But to your point, an external can come in and really explain and see the situation. We can often get too close to a scenario. And there are times where the CHRO and the HR leaders themselves can't see it because they're too close to the scenario. The other thing that I think the consultancy and the fractional community bring is we are aware we have greater access to innovation. When you work with one organization, you're focused on that. We are all focused on how do we stay relevant? How do we stay more human? By embracing today's technology to be able to deliver a greater impact to our clients. And how do our clients stay relevant? So there are some in-house CHROs who are more worried about the paycheck. And I get that. There is nothing wrong with that versus how do we keep ourselves and our clients relevant? Which is a very different concept. It's a very different way of behaving and delivering key messages. So, for example, I heard a great story today, slightly scary as well, of one organization who had four in-house, very operational HRs, by the way, who were replaced overnight by a piece of software who could do their roles because they couldn't justify, and it's awful that they had to, by the way, but they couldn't articulate the benefit that they brought over and above what this piece of software could do. So,
Yikes.
Jennifer, I absolutely agree with you. I think there's a massive opportunity for the HR consultancy and fractional world. There is still a huge opportunity and a place for in-house CHROs and HR teams, as long as they're really working on how do we keep our workforce relevant? What do we need to do about our roles? How does that integrate and change? What does the integration of our roles as HRs look like across the organization? And where does that need to change? Not in 5 years, but in 2, in 3 years' time.
Yeah, I think, and the annual HR conference with your colleagues from your current employer just doesn't do it. You need to be out in other industries at large, in the world at large, in different sized organizations, speaking to people. You cannot innovate from within an organization having never spoken to anyone outside that organization. I mean, maybe if you're really imaginative and a real trailblazer, but generally speaking, I've done that thing where you go to the HR conference and it's meant to be inspiring and super innovative. I've never found it to be so. And I think it's really about being in the broader business environment, I think, not just out speaking to other HR people. We see things done differently because we work with such a broad swath of organizations and types of people and types of leaders. And that's just a tremendously valuable toolkit that we develop as part of our role.
And again, that demonstrates the depth of expertise and experience that you can instantly plug into an organization where someone who's coming in to do an internal role to be a full-time employee will first learn the company systems and processes over anything else.
So Sam, I have a question about, a potential CHRO who wants to go into consulting or advisory, business advisory work that focuses on HR and may have only worked in very large organizations, or may have only worked in one industry, or may have worked in one company for their entire career. They have significant value, obviously. How would you help to support them in really understanding the greatest value they can bring to which clients, and where would you steer them away from, for example? So Jennifer's talking about, a variety of industries and a variety of companies and a variety of personalities, and I think that's 100% fair. But there are people who may have spent their entire career in one place or one industry. How would you guide them to be most successful?
And I think, Jennifer's raised a really interesting point. There are those who've got that level of expertise. And Kim, to your question and point, the first place I start with people who have, say, been in one sector and one company all of their career is where was your joy during those times? Because there's also a subconscious, huge piece going on over here, which is I am really scared. I think I only know this. Right. I think that's very much part of your question there, which is how do you help them overcome that fear? And that is, let's start with the positive. And it's not woo or fluffy. I'm trying to really get them to articulate to me and to themselves and say it out loud. This is the bit I'm good at. These are the areas I really enjoy. And that then allows us to have a different kind of conversation, which is, okay, well, how does that translate into this world? Again, where would you like to be with the organization? So I can then help, and me and my team can help steer that individual in such a way that they might be trying similar sectors, for example, that may share the same values, the same challenges, going through a similar pivot. Where the skill set is still transferable, as is their knowledge, but in such a way that we're helping to take away the fear as quickly as possible.
So is that in some cases that might be niching down, but I know you sort of have a contrarian opinion to the idea that everybody must develop a niche. So why don't you give us your philosophy on that a little bit? Because I'll tell you, if you're on LinkedIn, there's tremendous pressure, or at least there was, 3 years ago to niche down. And I just fundamentally reject it. I'm a generalist at heart. I would be so bored niching down, but it does seem to be sort of the popular opinion now. What can you tell us about what you've learned about that philosophy?
Yes, and I am a contrarian there, so I make no bones about that whatsoever. I also think you can have a niche within the generalist, and that might be, again, the areas and the bits of work you enjoy, right? But I am fed up with people who've invested in coaches who are coming to me saying, and I quote, "I've been told," which a coach shouldn't do, "that I need to," which a coach shouldn't say, "do." So they have been put upon that this is what I must do and have to do. And guess what? You have chosen to build a business to live life on your terms. You absolutely do not have to niche. Some of the most successful businesses who are HR consultants and business founders are doing so well today because they haven't niched. What they might do is be in one specific state and have gone to a lot of events and built a business that way. But at no point have they said, "I'm going directly into manufacturing and I'm going to work with companies that have 25 to 60 people." What are you going to do? Go to a networking event, say, "Excuse me, before we start, have you got 25 to 60 employees?" "No." "Oh, shame." And turn your back and walk. No. Do you know what I mean? Come on.
Oh, and it puts so much pressure on folks to do that. And I think fundamentally they just feel like something feels wrong about it, and it's just icky. If you don't really buy into it, you won't even be successful trying to do that. All right, so we sort of talked about the table stakes mindset shifts in terms of like don't act like an employee, that kind of thing. But I know you have some clients who have become the top 1% and really grown just exponentially under your guidance. What sort of sets those ones apart? If there is anything specific, there may not be.
Gosh, when I look back at all of them, the one thing they all did was focus on, again, the work they loved, first and foremost. They didn't inhibit themselves on, "I've got to earn this, I've got to." They took that out. They were also exceptional at networking with their existing network. Particularly when you've been in an organization, a corporate organization, or you've had a few jobs, you know a lot of people. So they really networked and used that network wisely. They also went to a lot of local events and expanded on their network. And they were very good at processes. I wish someone had told me 25 years ago, "Sam, you've got to get good at systems and processes. Track everyone you talk to, follow up with them." I was the kind of jazz hands that went out and had a lovely time. I had some great conversations, kind of sat back and just thought, "Where's all the business gone?" So these people learned from those mistakes of mine and they really went out there. And a couple of funny stories. I had one client who got to half a million in a year. And her first conversation with me was she'd had a row with her husband. She'd been made redundant. And he said, "Just go get another job." And she said, "No, I'm done. I'm going to start my own business." His exact words to her were, "Don't be so ridiculous." And she said, "So I now want to go and do it." Now, possibly the wrong way in principle to build business, but she absolutely smashed it. My point is, none of them put any limitations in their way in terms of, "I have to, I must, I should." And they were very exploratory. They tested things, they gave things a go. They were good when they had no's. They were good with failures and falling down because they just dusted themselves and got back up again.
Yeah, resilience. Very important.
Totally.
And then, Sam, what about, market conditions certainly play into success or failure, or maybe more limited success. Let's say success and more limited success versus failure. How do you know if the problem is product market fit or if it's just not a buyer's market right now? Like, what are some of the signs that you can maybe help some of our peers to identify in, is it me? Is it my product? Is it my process? Or is there something else going on?
Great question. And I have a philosophy that money's a merry-go-round, right? So guess what merry-go-round does? It just goes round. So be on the side of the merry-go-round where the money is. Ultimately, we are in a very fortunate place where whether we have to do something awful, like help companies downsize, whether we're in the middle of the road helping them to pivot, whether we're helping them to understand how to use AI and humans, still part workforce planning, right? Companies will always need some form of HR. My one thing I say to everyone who's thinking about this, particularly if you've got a great network, write down 20 people who are the kind of people you'd like to buy your services, who know, like, and trust you. Talk to them. You know me. These are the kind of things I'm thinking about offering. What's the most appealing and attractive to you? Listen to their language. How are they explaining it? Because they're not buying HR consultancy services necessarily. They are buying this pain point here. They're buying this challenge here that they want solved, or this goal that they want to aspire to and they need help with. And then use that language to go out to market and build that. If someone had said to me this time last year, do I need Sales Navigator? I would have said no. It's something that we use a lot now, but you don't necessarily have to have that. If you've got 150 great people in your network, you've got business there. The great thing these days is none of us need fancy pants offices, right? We need a laptop, we need a phone. What else do we need? Somewhere where we can take notes. How frightening is it that everything is on these two devices? Another conversation for another day. But my point is, you don't actually need that many clients if you're pricing right to replace and exceed your corporate income.
Which is good news. So assuming we have some folks listening who aren't who might be business owners, not necessarily other HR consultants, what's one piece of advice you would give to those business owners who are sort of fractional HR curious to sort of sell them on the idea and convince them to reach out to Kimmerer?
Perfect. Sales pitch incoming. So if you are a business owner and you've got two to three people and you're looking to grow, my question to you is, do you have an accountant who does your accounts and books? Answer, probably yes. Do you have a lawyer that does your legal side of things, that helps you form the company, that helps protect you? Why aren't you protecting that aspect of your business? Because if you don't bring in an HR, how will you know what you need to stay relevant? If you're sitting very quietly and looking around at the scenery, having a great time on that drive, everyone else is whizzing past you. Don't you want to know why? And that is why you need to bring an HR in to stay relevant, to help you grow your business, to stay profitable by bringing the right people in. And if you want to carry on winning those bigger pieces of work, guess what? You're going to need people or a blend of people and machines to deliver that. So invest in great HR today because you're going to save yourself a ton of money tomorrow and be able to scale and build your business that you really want to.
And it's so accessible now. Fractional makes it so accessible.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think we need to get that message out. It's like, I have a button in my email signature that says HR 911. Just hit it and get in my calendar. It's not some giant like all-consuming proposal, expensive, investment. It can actually be pretty simple and it's so accessible. And that is so valuable. Rather than sitting there chewing your fingernails, just call somebody.
Or the company who's sitting and thinking about, we're small enough, we're okay with someone who's fairly junior doing this work. But there are moments when you absolutely need greater expertise, but you don't need expertise all the time, right? So we're going through a transformation, we're going through a reduction in force, or we're going through an acquisition, or we're being acquired. Those are moments where you're not going to go and hire an executive, but you definitely need an executive at the table thinking about people.
And also, where would you be right now if you'd invested in that? If you invest now, it doesn't become a cost later.
Oh, we come into some costly problems.
I know. But if they'd invested in the beginning,
Oh, tell
I'm
me.
gonna have like quotes of Sam eaten all over my walls soon from this podcast. You've given pure gold. We're gonna move into what we call the rapid fire. So we have one question we ask everybody and then a couple of really fun ones. Jennifer, you want to go with the one question?
Sure. So, Sam, what's the one thing you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
Get an HR consultant.
Always the right answer. We tee that one up every time.
It's
I think only two out of 14 have gotten it right.
like we're leading the witness. We're leading the witness. All right. Okay. So, Sam, a couple of rapid fire fun questions. First job, what was your first job?
Oh my God, typing pool at KPMG. Very naughty there. Stories for another time. Probably not boring
Typing
people.
pool at Cape.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to do with that.
That
It's
sounds like the,
cold.
that is definitely the basis for a Netflix drama or a comedy. Typing
Seriously, bit of
pool.
both.
Oh my
Bit of
God, I
both.
love that. I love that. All right. Best job.
Would be Sky TV. I had done the B Sky B Sky merger at Goldman Sachs as the admin support. And at 21, I was spearheading that. My then boss fired me. He was also British Airways' single largest client, and I could hold a 747 in Hong Kong and got lots of trouble when I did. And
Wow.
then after that, because I'd done the BSB Sky merger, the PA to the then chief executive of Sky TV got in touch and went, "Hey, come aboard and join us."
Come
And
aboard
I
and
was
help
there
us
for
hold
7 years.
planes behind. Help hold the planes back for us.
Honestly, it was a different world. It was a different time. But, I really have earned my way up to where we're at today. None of it came through ease. I got my qualifications as I went. I learned as I went. I've got a very diverse background, and it's probably helped me with where I am today for sure.
Amazing.
Amazing. At 21. Is that what you said? 21.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Ridiculous.
What a
Wow.
life. Okay.
All right. Biggest mess up at work.
Oh my days. And I spoke about this the other day. And again, it was when I was at Sky. And my boss would fly all around the world. He'd go everywhere. And I remember this one time we'd got him a jet. He had to go and it was last minute, scramble, scramble, which always was the case. And I said, yes, I'll cancel everything. And then reception called up to me and said, Sam X, Y, and Z's here. And I went the colour of the innards of my shirt, which is white, and I'm pale enough as to start with. And as I went down the stairs, so I was based in the UK, I thought, how am I going to tell this guy who's brought his jet and all that fuel and paid for the captains all the way over from Australia to the UK, specifically to meet with my boss, that I forgot to cancel this meeting?
Oh,
Oh, yeah.
what
Oh, yeah.
happened?
It didn't go so well. So, these were all very, very senior people, right? These were chief executives of FTSE 100s of some of the world's largest companies. We did deals that I cannot talk about today still. And this was one of them. And I just thought, I'm just going to have to suck it up and take it. And quite rightly, I got an absolute earful, both from him, from my boss when he phoned in. And I'm like, I'm just going to have to phone him and tell him what I've done. So that was a painful experience, but yeah, that's the biggest. So when people say they've messed up at work, I'm like, yeah, okay, good. Let me share a story with you. Honestly, I'm going to make your day and make you feel so much better right now. I was 22, 23 when that happened, and that's quite a long time ago now. But I still have that sick feeling in the pit of
Oh
my
my
stomach.
gosh. Yeah. And to put it in context, that was an analog world. Like there was no calling someone on their cell phone. There was no sending an email or a text message to correct it. This was like you're dealing with this until your boss probably landed somewhere else and with someone sitting in front of you.
We could phone the jet, right? So I had to phone the jet and say, listen, this has happened, but with the price of fuel today, just, I mean, can it, there's no excuse. That was the biggest biggest mistake I made. And yeah, that hurt for a long time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, it kept me sore for a bit. Let me leave it at that, right?
So, best learning.
It actually came from my dad many years ago, and he had multiple businesses, and I've had multiple businesses. And from the age of 14, we didn't get a penny. Everything we had to earn ourselves. And my dad said, you've got to be prepared to clean a loo, to clean a toilet, and have absolutely no ego. Because the second you have an ego, you can't run a business. Stay humble, stay curious. And I've always had that in my head. If everything goes wrong tomorrow, I have to be prepared to go and clean someone else's loo. So, I have a real problem with arrogance. It's not something I'm appreciative of for that very reason. I think you can be confident, but that's been my biggest life lesson. Stay curious, stay humble, and remember that if it all goes wrong tomorrow, you've got to be prepared to roll your sleeves up and do some pretty nasty things if you need to.
Amazing. Love that. So true.
Final question, Sam. Your quickest quit.
Well, it was probably from my Goldman days, and before he said I'd fire you, I went, I quit. He screamed his way onto a plane. He didn't have the right visa. He got a military escort back, so that goes to show you the level of his temper. And before he screamed and shouted at me, I went, I quit. So I think that conversation lasted about 2 minutes.
Amazing. So, Sam, thank you so much for being with us. Where can our audience find you if they are potential CHROs or HR folks who are looking to go out on their own?
Thank you. Look me up on LinkedIn. I'm Sam Eaton. Check out Sam Eaton. Look for Sam Eaton Mindability. I'm the one with the green background. You can't miss me. Also, send me an email. I'm Sam at mindabilityconsulting.org. Those are probably the best ways. But yeah, send me a DM on LinkedIn. My phone is attached to my hand pretty much from the second I wake up till just before I put the phone down and go to bed. I will get back to you. There are a lot of people who just want to chat about, is it for me? And I'm happy to tell you how it really is.
That's wonderful. Sam, thank you so much for agreeing to come on with us today. It's been really enlightening, inspiring, and fun. It's a little bit of a different content for us because we're usually targeting small business, not other HR folks. But I know a lot of people are going to get tremendous value out of this conversation. So we really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And thank you for inviting me. It has been super fun to spend time with you both.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.